Hey everybody, this is Jeff from the FASD Success Show. Today we are talking to the DIG FASD team, and DIG stands for Dissecting the Genetic Contributions to Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder. FASD is a spectrum, and this research team says that by understanding how genes make FASD different, they hope to discover and improve treatments and interventions. If you might be confused about genetics, like I was, don't worry, we got you covered. They're going to break it all down for you, and this is the first episode where I actually have a co-host. Come meet her. Come meet the DIG team. We're going to have a good time. Let's get after it.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 95 of the FASD Success Show. Whether this is your first episode or your 95th episode, I am just so glad you're here. I know how precious your time is. And the fact that you spend a little bit of time each week with us is really appreciated. So welcome. And listen, I got to get this preamble stuff out of the way because we got a big episode for you. If you're digging what we're doing, no pun intended, because we are speaking to the DIG research team. If you're digging what we are doing, please do not hesitate to subscribe. Why? It helps me and it helps you. It helps you because as soon as we put out a brand new episode, it goes bang right into your phone, right into your tablet. However you subscribe to the podcast, you just get it first. You don't have to wait or go looking for it. Like I always look for my keys almost every morning to the point of frustration. You get what I'm saying. Also, it helps us because there's millions of us out there. And what do parents do? They go to the internet when they're looking up for fetal alcohol info. And it helps us because it makes us more relevant. When it makes us more relevant, what I mean by that is the algorithms, right? The people in the back, the beep boops and all that noise, all that nonsense says, hey, people like this show. And so when people are looking for info, they're going to show our show. So it just helps. And it's all about symbiotic relationship because that's what the show is all about. It's all about creating success, whether you're an individual on the spectrum, a parent who is raising an individual on the spectrum, a frontline worker, aunt, uncle, grandma, grandpa, house pet, it doesn't matter. How do we do that? We do that by interviewing some people who are doing amazing work in the FASD community. And not only that, I did promise today is the first show with a co-host, and her name is Barb Clark. Barb, how the heck are you? Welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, thanks. I'm super jazzed to be here today.
Yes, jazz hands. So
jazz hands.
I wanted to try this, Barb, because if people don't know, Barb, you've been on the podcast before. And in fact, you've been on episode 23. If you go to fasdsuccess.com/podcast, you were a guest before. And from that guest, we've had a relationship for many years. Mm-hmm. And from that, I asked you to become one of the coaches for my online coaching course. And you've been doing it this year. And I just think our chemistry is kick-ass. What do you think?
Oh my God, it's so much fun. Yeah, we have a nice job of balancing each other out and having a good time while we're doing it and sharing different experiences. No, it's been a lot of fun being one of the coaches with your program.
And so, because we do coaching calls, that's what we do. And it's like this, but yep. You know, there's 50 or 60, 70 other families that are on at the same time. And I just wanted to try something different because we're at episode 95 and it's usually just me. And sometimes I'm just staring into the mic and I said, man, wouldn't it be good to actually talk to someone? And what we find out from our interview is that you end up asking some questions I never would have thought of, because not only are you smarter than me, but also you're in the trenches, right? So if you have people haven't listened to the podcast, give us the 45 second version of your story, even though it could be 45 hours.
I can do it fast. So I'm a parent. I have 4 young adult kids. They're 19, 20, 21, and 22. And my 22-year-old is on the fetal alcohol spectrum. She's an amazing young woman who has taught me a lot about life and living and all of that kind of stuff. And so I do, you know, I do this for a living too. I do a lot of training and consulting on FASD, but other kind of trauma related things in the US and Canada. And just, you know, so passionate about FASD and trying to share strategies and ideas so that other caregivers and professionals can do better, because ultimately what we want is our kids and adults on the spectrum to do better. And we all do better by knowing more.
Hence the title of the show.
Mm-hmm. Success Show. You got
it. And you have the sweet Minnesotan accent.
I do. I got that. Don't you know?
Because I believe that Minnesota could be another province of Canada too. Like, we're similar, dude. The topography is similar.
Yep.
I don't have that much of an accent. I do say A, but you got a little twang, and I might sound like that too. You never know.
Yeah.
But I think the people are great. You're great. You're right. I've just been having a great time with you. And it's always good to have a different perspective. And you do that. Well, our goals are the same. And what we want for our parents is the same. Just hive minds, more minds. And we're thinking. And so that's why I wanted you to do this. So, folks, we have a co-host here. Now, what an episode to bring you on is because we're talking genetics. Now, there's things that make my brain hurt. lots of things, as you could tell, that make my brain hurt. Were you, before this, honestly, how familiar were you with genetics?
You know, I have some minimal, you know, probably more than your average Joe, but I've got a little bit of knowledge on it, because we have seen genetic doctors and been on. So I've even spoken at some genetic conferences and stuff like that, because my daughter also has something called Turner syndrome, which is a genetic chromosomal abnormality as well. And so with that and all the digging I've had to do around that, I did start to learn a little bit about genetics and epigenetics. And so it was fascinating to be co-hosting this one with you, because every time I'm listening to the podcast, you always ask the majority of the questions that I have, but sometimes I'm sitting there screaming at my radio or whatever is playing. It's usually not my radio, because I don't use radios anymore, right?
That's okay.
But I'm like screaming at my phone or my iPod or whatever. Oh, ask him this. And so it's kind of fun to be able to be on there and get to do it.
Right.
You ask like 90-95% of the things that's going on in my head when you're with somebody. So.
Oh, that's cool, man. I appreciate that. I try to have that position, like, what would the audience say to me, right? That's all we do. We talk to caregivers all day, and so we try to be a representative of them. If I was more organized, I could say, hey, here's who's coming on the show. Do you have questions? But it's personal chaos back here with, you know, with Olivia and just me in general, I guess. If I was, you know,
what do you mean, Olivia? That has nothing to do with you.
Well, I try to pawn it off on a toddler for sure. But yes, genetics, we're going to have a good conversation about it today. Thank goodness. Like, they were all great. What a great, sweet team. But thank God for Janine Schultz. She's going to break it on down for us. So I do not want to take up too much more of your time, but I do want to let y'all, because I went to Texas a couple of times, Barb, just so you know. So that's why I could say, I could say y'all. And I know you live in Minnesota, but you want to beat it from there, right? You don't want to live there anymore.
Bailing in the end of spring or next summer, my husband and I were pulling up roots and moving south to a warmer climate. We don't know where yet, but we're out of here. We're done with winter.
That's a smart play. I went to Arizona once and it was so hot. It was even hot at the nighttime. I'm a polar bear, buddy. I can't do it yet. I see why people do it when I'm shoveling my driveway 100 times, but are you like excited? Like,
oh, I'm so excited. Every time that I walk outside or I'm driving out in the snow here, I'm like, it's my last winter here. I've been here my whole life in Minnesota and I love Minnesota. Lots of great things, but I'm ready for a different climate, not retiring, just working remote.
The DIG research team is from Indiana University Medical School. And we talked to three people in particular. I'm going to give a short bio, then we're going to head on over to the interview. So one of the ladies we talked to is Dr. Leah Wetherill. And I called her Lee the whole time, but, you know, I butcher names. So Dr. Leah Wetherill is one of the lead scientists for the DIG FASD study at the Anna University School of Medicine. She's also been researching FASD for more than 15 years. She's particularly interested in understanding why ADHD is common in individuals with FASD. As a statistician, she also helps analyze the data that is collected for DIG FASD. Then we have Janine Schultz. Janine Schultz is a genetic counselor who works on the DIG FASD study at the Indiana University School of Medicine. She uses her previous experience as a pediatric genetic counselor working with children with FASDs to provide insight into fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. She also helps review medical records so we can learn more about how FASDs affect health and behavior. And then We have Abigail Erickson, aka Abby. Abby is a clinical research specialist who works on the DIG FASD study. When you email or call us, she is the person that you'll most likely answer your questions and help you. Abby also maintains the study day-to-day operations and helps to make sure that the study follows research guidelines. They weren't expecting to do a podcast. They thought it was just a warm-up, like an initial meeting, but they stood up and they said, okay, let's do it. And these ladies are amazing. So Barb, are you ready?
Ready, let's go.
I'm ready. All right, let's go. Hey everybody, welcome to the interview. Welcome to the show. Barb, are you excited about this?
Oh, I'm super excited. It's fun to be a co-host.
And it's not only is it fun to be a co-host, but it's fun to have our guests on. We have from the Indiana School of Medicine and Research, DIG FASD. We got Janine Schultze, right? Did I say that right, buddy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Schultze. I'm just going to call you by your last name, Asa. Abby Erickson and Lee Wetherill. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank We're happy you. To be here.
Happy to be here.
Oh, yes, ladies. Okay, so, you know, we just met a little while ago. This is important stuff. And what we're going to do is just go through all the cool things that you're doing, the research, especially on genetics that you're looking at. But first, we always like to get the Marvel origin story, like the superhero story, because people in the field are superheroes. So the abbreviated version, Schultze, is that go? I just rolls off the tongue and I dig it. From playing sports.
Sounds like Hogan's Heroes. Wasn't there a character on Hogan's Heroes named something like that?
I know nothing. Nothing.
Barb, I think you just dated yourself.
Before my time.
Yeah, we're just like.
Dude, that's true. That's true. A couple of people here don't know that show, I'm sure.
Schultze, how did you get involved? Like, what is your role with DIG? And then how did you get involved with the FASD team, I guess?
Yeah, so I am a genetic counselor. So my job in general is just to help make genetics understandable. And I have also worked in the clinic with a lot of families, with kids with FASDs and adults with FASDs, helping with after school programs. So my area of expertise in this study is to really look at some of the medical records and to go through and help with writing some of the things that help make the study understandable and answer people's questions about, you know, what genetics is and how it plays a role. So that's really, genetics is my jam. I'm kind of a huge genetics nerd, as I think most of us are. And I was excited by this study because specifically worked with kids with FASDs. And I really think it's an important topic.
I might be dating myself, but you're like the Egon Spengler. Or, you know, wait, you are the translator. So you let the scientists do the science. And then when people are saying, what are they talking about? Then you're the one to do it. And your first name is Janine. So see, this is symbiotic. And I think that's great because the folks are going to want to know what genetics is, right? Because that's a big thing. Abby, what about yourself, friend? How did you get involved in this?
Yeah, so I actually graduated from my undergraduate degree in 2020, mid-pandemic, and I was hired as a clinical research specialist for this role. So I'm on the coordinating side of the study. So I contact the participants and talk with them and verify their information and send them all the materials they need for the kit and to participate.
So why FASD? Was it a job? Like, was it just an opportunity, area of interest?
Yeah, so I actually was hired for a different role, and then they offered me the job and said, actually, we're going to put you on the FASD study. And I had never been involved with anything related to FASD before. It was a completely new world for me, but I'm really glad that I got the opportunity to start on this study. I feel like I've learned so much and have just had the opportunity to grow so much in this role and getting to learn about so many new things with FASD.
I dig it. What about yourself, Lee?
Well, I want to date myself because back in 2000, a few years after Tatiana hired me, Tatiana is the lead investigator of the project. The dean at the time of the medical school, he suggested, actually, he's not the dean of the medical school. He was dean of research, but he was very much involved in trips to South Africa and helping the people there with the prenatal alcohol exposure. When he came back here, he pretty much told Tatiana, we've got to do something about this. And I'm a statistician by training. And so what he did was he invited, I think, like four or five researchers who were doing their own little independent research, but they were studying the cognitive effects of the alcohol exposure. And he said, look, you know, let's give all your data to Leah, and we're going to see what we can do when we combine everyone's data. And, you know, every group by themselves maybe got a really small effect or maybe a non-significant effect. But when you put all the data together, now you've got, instead of 50 people here and 50 people there, now you've got 150, 200, 300 people, and you can really see an effect. And now you're confident in the results and you can publish them and get them out into the field so that other people can see, okay, these are cognitive issues that we know show up in children with prenatal alcohol exposure. Fortunately, now the consortium is focusing on adults, but back then it was mostly children that they were focusing on. So that's how I got started in it. And I confess, I didn't know anything about FASD, but it's been really exciting to learn about it since then. And I actually did my PhD on the effects of prenatal alcohol exposure on ADHD, and I love it.
So first I want to apologize. I should have said doctor in front. Is that okay if I call you Lee?
Yes.
Yeah. No, you worked really hard for that designation. And then here I am just, hey, buddy, how's it going? Yeah. Okay, cool. Because you worked hard for it. Okay. But Lee, I'm glad that we could do that.
And is it Leah or Lee?
It's Leah, but it doesn't matter. I go by anything.
It's Leah.
I told you guys you would blow it. Leah.
You know, that people do that, right? And they're polite to me. And then I have been calling them certain names for like 15 years, even. See, this is why we have Barb on the show now. You are officially continuity manager, Barb. Thanks for that. So I'll ask you, Leah, doctor, have you been involved with other studies at DIG before?
Well, actually, Dr. Lee, the one who invited the scientists to Indiana University and said, we can do bigger things when we combine our data, he's actually started the consortium that we're a part of now. And he actually told Tatiana, you know, the easiest thing to detect is the face. And you know that, and your listeners know that the effects of prenatal alcohol exposure are not just at the extreme end of the spectrum of people with actual FAS. There can be exposure and nothing visible to the naked eye. Right. But with the three-dimensional camera, those cameras can pick up very subtle differences. And we can use that 3D imaging to detect, is there prenatal alcohol exposure, and use that to kind of predict what's the cognitive issues behind that. So if the face, go ahead.
No, I was just saying incredible. And also, you know, to your earlier point, how, because we often in the world of FASD, right, Barb, we do stuff in silos. You know, people are doing things here, people are doing things here. And to bring everybody together at like the hive mind, you're absolutely right. I think that's very important. So there is a Lee involved here, right? At some point, right? There was Dr.
Lee. He's Chinese, L-I. Yeah, but he's passed away since then.
Oh,
but
he was really. Oh my gosh, I am batting 1,000 here.
No. There's no way you could have known.
R.I.P. Dr. Lee, sounds like a great man, getting everybody together. And so let's have a chat about what's going on now. And Barb, do you know anything about genetics?
Little bit. I was going to say to Janine that my daughter we've had a geneticist for since she was 3 and a genetic counselor too. And she once drew them a picture and the doctor, the geneticist, was some kind of superhero, which is funny because you're doing the Marvel origin stories. And then the genetic counselor was his sidekick. So she always referred to the genetic counselor as his sidekick, and that's who she preferred.
So then, Barb, why did you go to a geneticist? What were they looking for, like as a parent?
Yep. So for the couple of different reasons, but my daughter also has co-occurring Turner syndrome, which is a chromosomal abnormality. And so she was followed by genetics. Before she was even diagnosed with FASD, we thought Turner syndrome was what we were dealing with mainly. But eventually, when she hit some of her adolescence, she had a lot of different chronic pain and blood markers that were off and things like that. So we were seeing a lot of different specialists. And so they got us kind of back in deep with genetics when she was an adolescent.
Okay. So now I'm going right to you, Schultzy. That's awesome. Can you explain to me, like I'm 5, what genetics is?
Yeah, sure. And I can also, you know, first kind of add on to your question for Barb as well. So it's interesting that kids with FASDs often get referred to genetics, even though there isn't a specific genetic test for FASD, right? And that's because geneticists are trained in what we call syndromes. So those are health issues that have multiple things going on. and they kind of take all those puzzle pieces and they put it together and then identify what might be going on. They're also specially trained in looking at those subtle features of the face, like Leah was mentioning. And so they're kind of uniquely fit to evaluate kids for FASDs, even though there isn't a genetic test that we're going to do to figure out FASDs. So to answer your question about genetics, you know, genes are the instructions in our body, right? So they are in every single one of our cells, and they are literally the instructions that tell our body how to do everything it needs to do. So it tells our body how to grow our hair, and it tells our body how to take our food and turn it into energy. And it also is the instructions that tell our body how to build our heart and how to build our bones as we're, you know, growing as a fetus, as an embryo, all of that. So those instructions, though, they're not 100% of what determine who we are and what we're like, right? They work in collaboration with our environment. And so trying to figure out what the combination of those two complex things does is kind of what we're looking at in our study. So, you know, we have the genes that we're born with. We inherit them from our parents and they inherited them from their parents that are passed down, but that's not the only thing that makes us who we are. And so as we're growing and developing, environment plays a role as well. And those things all kind of talk to each other and they all play a role. And then, you know, what that outcome is and why, and which things play a larger role than others is kind of what we're trying to figure out.
Okay. I've also heard the term, I'm glad you're on here so you can help me clarify, from Dr. Gail Andrews. She talked about some studies and they talk about epigenetic changes. My understanding is that prenatal alcohol exposure might block some of those genetics. So when somebody has an experience, like you were talking about the environment with the genes, either they don't turn on or something happens. Can you clarify a little bit about what that is?
Sure. So our study is not looking specifically at epigenetic changes, but you are right. Epigenetic changes are something that are important to look at as well. So we have our instructions, our genetic instructions, and then there are also these things that kind of turn those genes on and off, or say, okay, this gene over here, we're not going to shut you down for a little while. And that is what epigenetics is the turning on and off of those genes. Some of that turning on and off is permanent. Some of it can be turned on and off again later, but it doesn't change the actual specific instruction. So what we're looking at is that basic instruction that starts out and which genes may actually play a role. Once we figure out which genes those are, which instructions those are that are important, we can kind of combine that or look forward into epigenetics to see how those might change or be turned on or off. That might be future research. But our research is specifically looking at little tiny variations within those instructions, within those genetic instructions that may change them or might be important. And this requires us to have tons of people in order to kind of compare and find all those.
Yeah. Okay, great. So I'm starting to figure it out. Barb, is this making sense to you?
Yeah, it is. And I just love, and I'm not calling you a geek or anything, Janine, but I just, it's like,
go for it.
You look so happy. You're like so
into it.
That's how I am when I talk about FASD, but it's kind of cool to see the passion that you have about what you're talking about.
And although the listeners can't see me, I have the deer in the headlights look because it's called processing, right? Like, so I'm looking like that. Okay. Is this study specifically looking at how prenatal alcohol exposure affects genes, change the instructions? Am I on the, like, I got to get it right here. Is that what it is, Lee?
Actually, I think Janine would be great to answer this.
Okay.
So we are more looking at how those genes and the instructions that we start off with may play a role in which things are affected by prenatal alcohol exposure.
Got it.
Or how much we are affected by prenatal alcohol exposure. So kind of a predisposition.
Okay, got it. And so
some genes may enhance the effect of the alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe
say that again.
Some genes may enhance the effect of the alcohol. So it may affect your heart, maybe affect cognition or the face.
Right.
Other genes may be actually protective. So it just depends on the gene. It depends on the outcome that you're looking at.
So why do two people who...
Sorry, hold on, Janine.
Yeah, go ahead, Barb.
So look, we're laymen, right? So go ahead, Barb. What were you saying?
Well, I was going to say, so what you're kind of saying is you're looking at trying to see, like, if somebody is exposed, why some people are exposed maybe in a, you know, more mild or severe, or have other kind of medical things on top of it or that kind of stuff?
That you're exactly right. So that's why we got into genetics. We started with a three-dimensional camera, and then we said, hey, you know, let's do this online and get saliva and see, because every, you can have a wide spectrum of prenatal alcohol exposure from very, very minimal to heavy exposure, and the exact same outcome.
Right.
So what makes these people so different with the same exposure, or, you know, similar timing of the exposure? And we think genetics is the force behind that.
Because, but then also moms play a role too, right? In development, yeah. And their genetics, isn't that like linked too? So if mom was exposed, like it's just a big smorgasbord. And so are you trying to untangle all of that and try to find some consistencies in that, or you're just not sure what you're finding or going to find? Like, is there a hypothesis? We have an idea of what we think might be happening?
So Janine, jump in at any time, okay? What we do is, the reason we wanted to do the study online is so that anybody could join the study, because to look at genetics, we need a lot of people to have any kind of confidence, but also there's a lot of variation in your genes. So something to have an effect is probably not very common. So you need even more people to get enough people to have any confidence in the results. But you need people with the same outcome that you're looking at. So maybe one of the things we do is looking at a brief cognitive, kind of like a game that they can play online, so we can measure cognitive effects of alcohol. So if enough people take that, then we can see, okay, are there any genes that maybe, do some people have one particular gene and maybe score better, or that would be a gene that actually protects against exposure, or a different group of people have some other gene and their scores are maybe not as good.
Right. No, that makes sense. I just struggle because A, I'm simple, but also B, from my understanding in the development FASD, like I was under the pressure, Dr. Gail Andrews talked about alcohol plus cortisol increases maybe the cognitive issues, the other stuff that's going on. But so how accurate would this be if there's so many variables? Like, so is that, I guess, the need for the amount of data collection you're trying to get here?
Absolutely. So the more things you have all playing a role in combination, the more people you need in order to actually do any sort of decent research, right? So when we look at our genes, we each have tons of tiny little variations all within our genes, right? Some of them are really important, some of them not so important, and then there's some that we're really not quite sure if they're important or not. And because we all have so many different variations in our genes, trying to figure out which things work in combination with prenatal alcohol exposure, or like you mentioned, different hormone levels, or all of these things that kind of act in combination, we need a very, very large group of people so that we can identify, let's say we look at a group of people who have FASD and ADHD, and we say, okay, in this group of people, are there certain genetic variations that come up more commonly rather than the rest of the group, or more commonly than we'd see in anybody else in the general population. Right. And that can give us an area to hone in on and say, okay, well, what does this gene do? And what's important about it? And what hormones does it interact with? What pathways in the body does it interact with? What organs is it important in developing and talking to? And that's what can give us a window into all these other things you're talking about.
So you want a large group so that you can almost put them in their own little groups, right? So like you were talking about the comorbidity groups for maybe ADHD, maybe the physical ailments. Is that correct? Am I on the right track there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You see, it takes me a while, Barbara, but I'll eventually get this.
Getting there. How about aggression? Is that like a specific thing? I'm always curious if there's a specific reason why some of our kids struggle more with that.
That's such a good question. And we are collecting behavioral data too. So many kids with FASDs now, which is fantastic, have actually undergone a neuropsych evaluation or actually had some sort of behavioral testing. I know, 10 or 15 years ago, that wasn't as often the case. So it's encouraging to me to see, these records come through and see these great big behavioral evaluations. At least, these kids are being talked to and listened to, but it's certainly something we're collecting. And hopefully there's a lot of different, like you said, comorbidities that we can look at if we get enough people.
Right.
How many people do you want? What's the big goal?
Yeah. Our target is to have 2,000 people. That would be ideal.
2,000 people. Yeah. And so we're talking anybody. Okay. Wait, what's the criteria? Okay. Let me just say that. What's the criteria for people to participate in your study?
Yes, absolutely. So you can live anywhere in the world, but you do have to be able to speak English. There is no age limit. So anybody of any age can join, and you do not have to have an FASD diagnosis. You just have to have really strong suspicion of prenatal alcohol exposure.
So you are lifting so many barriers. Would that be a group that you would segment, ones that have an official diagnosis and people that don't, Janine?
We do take down that information, so we can certainly look at it. But as I'm sure you're aware, there's a lot of inconsistencies in who gets a diagnosis. That can depend on who's doing the evaluation, what those agreed upon criteria are, how good of access people actually have to a specialist or someone who's, capable of doing that evaluation. So we definitely are taking that information, and we have it if we want to take a look at it. But I think there are a lot of other variables there that determine whether or not someone has a diagnosis, and it may not be a great predictor of what their actual symptoms are.
Are you going to be, Janine, looking into social history? So how does this go down? Okay, so somebody wants to participate, like we're going to start from their journey all the way to their involvement, your guys' involvement, and then like picture like the factory, okay? So somebody's listening to this and they say, heck yeah, this sounds super cool. I want to hook up with the nerds, right? We love nerds. So Abby, I'm assuming you are on the front lines, right? So what is this? Is it a website? Take them from step one. How does this work? So we know the criteria now. Anybody either suspected or has a diagnosis of any age, as long as they speak English, because that's what your staff speaks. From there, what would they do?
Yeah, so we have a study website. It is digfast.org, digfasd.org. And that launches our study portal right there. So if you go to that website, there'll be a yellow button that says get started. And you can click there and it'll take you to our secure system that we use to start collecting information from participants. So first in the process, when you enroll in a study, you have to give your permission or your consent to be in the study. So they'll read a consent form or watch a series of consent videos that we have made. And then they'll decide based on the information there if they want to participate or if they want to ask us questions first. And then they'll sign their name on these online forms if they want to participate, and they'll give their permission. And they'll also sign a HIPAA authorization form, which allows us to look at their medical records if they have any, which is what Janine will do. And then if the participant is between the ages of 7 and 17, they will also give their permission to be in the study. It's called their assent because they're a child. So their parents' consent is the main thing that matters, but they also give their permission as well.
I just want to jump in because I think it's important. We are dealing with individuals on the spectrum. We do know sometimes consent can be a little abstract, but they can have somebody. So even if you're an adult on the spectrum, you could have somebody there while you register. Can this somebody call on their behalf and ask questions about what's involved?
Absolutely. Yep. Definitely. So if it's the case where they're an adult and they want somebody to be with them and help them enroll, that is completely okay and understandable. We'll take note of that in our record. We'll get their permission for us to speak with their parent or their guardian about their participation in the study, and then we can move forward with that.
Okay, excellent. So then, boom, they say, yep, sign me up. I want to do this. What's next?
So they'll fill out some online forms that ask for contact information, demographic information, their health history, and some information, if they know it, on their prenatal exposure to alcohol. And then that's all for the online portion. And then I'll review that information and I'll give them a call. We'll talk about any questions they have, confirm information, and then they'll get a kit in the mail to complete the rest of the study. And this kit will have a couple different things in it. So it'll have materials to provide the saliva sample for us, and then prepaid envelope to send that back into our lab, who will then analyze the sample. There are also materials for taking facial photographs of the participant, along with special stickers to put on their face so that we make sure that we have the correct proportions right when those are analyzed. And then also, our participants currently receive compensation for their participation in the study.
Go on.
Yes. So depending on which portions they complete, they'll get money. You get $30 for the saliva sample, $10 for those online forms you fill out, and then another $10 for the photographs. And then there's an online cognitive test that you get another $10 for. So they'll receive a compensation card in their kit, and it works like a Visa debit card. So we can upload money to it from our end as they complete portions, and then they can just use it wherever they would normally go shopping.
Do you hear that, everybody? You spit in a thing and then you're going to get some bling, right? That should be the official tagline. Spit in a thing and get some bling. What do you think, Barb?
I love it. That always helps, right? Do you know, Abby, about how much time this would take an individual or their family?
Yeah, that's a great question. All of that is also on that consent form that they read before they sign up. The estimated times are there. But the forms we estimate could take up to an hour for people to complete. The saliva sample is super easy, as long as, so 30 minutes before, they can't eat or drink or chew gum or anything like that. But providing the saliva sample is super quick and easy. And then the photos, we estimate 30 minutes to take and upload them.
Okay. Can they come back? So can they chunk this? Because an hour for some of our guys could be 25 hours.
Absolutely. Yep. There's no time limit on it at all. All of our online forms have return codes, so they can exit and come back whenever they want.
So do not be afraid of the forms, friends, right? So this is science. We're doing it for the science because, you know, forms at the best of times. Right. So, but we're doing it. So if you're an individual on the spectrum and you're listening to this, we're doing it for science. You can come back. You can do it in little chunks because you're going to get the money. You're going to get the money. And that's what we're talking about. But you're also doing it for the greater good for mankind. Okay. And so, okay. So they do that. They send in the stuff. Okay. So what happens? So it comes to you, like you just tell me, I'm just making shit up at this point, but what's that?
Yeah. So as soon as our lab receives that saliva sample, then we will invite participants who are 5 and older to complete the online cognitive test that Leah was talking about earlier. And that's optional. They can do it if they want to, they don't have to, but if they want to, we'll send them a link and then they can go on and complete that again at their own pace and they can complete it when they want to. And when that's done, another $10 gets added to their card.
And so then what happens behind the scenes? What's happening? Is it lab coat time, like safety goggles and those things? Give us a picture here.
Yes.
What happens when we're digging into the data?
I don't do that part. I'm going to punt it down to Leah.
Well, Abby, you have a very important job, right? And I think it's important that people hear your voice. And if they have questions, will it be you they're talking to?
Most likely, yep. Or at least they'll come to me first. And sometimes I hand them off to Janine if they've got a genetics question, but they'll come through me.
So, you know, it seems like everybody's handing things off to Janine here.
There you go.
I'm the superhero.
I have to say, though, what's really nice is sometimes those frontline staff that we have to deal with aren't friendly and helpful. And so,
or FASD informed, let's just call it, Barb. You're being way too gentle, right? Like, they said, what's the big deal? It's a form, fill it out. And there's no stupid question. There's no silly question. If you're listening to this, right, Abby, you will make sure that you're helping people out.
Absolutely.
You want them to get this money.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and we want them to ask questions. Don't hesitate on questions.
Yeah. You know, and that making people jump through hoops. You're holding the hoop. Right.
I literally wasn't a research thing, but one of the frontline people that I had to call to try to get some questions answered, I hung up and started crying because they were not helpful and they're kind of rude. So like that's not that uncommon sometimes. And, you know, our parents, especially our caregivers and that kind of stuff there, and even the adults on the spectrum, there's some hard things going on. And so it's really nice to be able to deal with some friendly people when you're going through this kind of, you know, and we're trying to improve science and supports for our individuals.
So we're trying to tell you, Abby, your job is very important.
And
we appreciate what you're doing. And folks, you can't see it because we're on a Zoom call doing this, but she's got the look. Like if Abby said, hello, Discover Card, like it's like one of those commercials too, like perfect. You'll never be without a job. And we thank you so much. Okay. So you get this information and then we call in Schultzy, right? Is that what happens next, Janine?
Oh, no, then we call in Leah, the statistician.
Oh, okay,
she is the numbers and the data lady.
So in the assembly line, Leah, what do you do? What's your position now that you have these samples and pictures?
Well, actually, you know, Janine is a super help because I'm a little over-enthusiastic and I just want to say, oh, let's compare people with ADHD to people who don't have a diagnosis of ADHD. And she's like, okay, you need to be careful because just because there's no diagnosis doesn't mean they don't have it. It just means that we may not have the medical record for it. So Janine short shrifts herself on this, but I mean, she gives a lot of advice on analysis.
I do. So after Abby collects those forms, I do run through all of the medical records. So it is important to look at kind of what people's growths are over time, you know, where do they measure at in terms of height and weight? And then, you know, what different diagnoses have they had, whether that's behavioral diagnoses, do they have a heart murmur, you know, all of those things that are looked at throughout a person's life. So I go through those medical records and note all of those in our database to make sure that those are data points that we can use.
Cool. If I know some of the research projects that we've tried to have my daughter be involved in here, we're in the Twin Cities of Minnesota, she hasn't qualified for because of the co-occurring disorder. Does that matter sometimes if they have some other co-occurring things?
For this study, not at all. They're welcome to enroll and then Janine will sort through those diagnoses.
Yeah, we do have a couple different individuals who have other genetic diagnoses or other co-occurring disorders. We do take note of that in case we need to kind of move those people around when we're doing analysis. But yeah, we're happy to have everyone as part of the data set. And, you know, we can work that out on the back end. We're just happy with everybody who wants to be involved.
Cool. Keeping with the factory line here, I'm like the shift boss and the foreman. We're moving along. Okay, so you look at the medical records, then what happens?
In addition to medical records, we've got the information people filled out online. And one of the forms that we ask a lot, their health. Do they have heart problems? Do they have sleep problems sleeping? Do they have, you know, all these physical problems? And the nice thing about that is we have right now adults are the ones filling that out. And we can combine our data with data that's collected by two other projects that are funded as part of this consortium. So we hope to be able to combine those data together and we can do something like people who have a heart problem and compare them to people who don't have a heart problem. Are there any genetics that show up in one group or the other group? One group, but not the other group.
Okay.
That's an example of an analysis that we could do.
So you're getting all the people. Janine's going to make sure everything is compartmentalized. And then when you have enough samples, do you wait until you hit your goal or would you just start analyzing the data at a certain percentage of participants?
Well, that's a really good question. And I would say that right now our sample size is too small for us to say, let's analyze these data and see what we find, because we really don't have enough people to have any confidence if there was something significant or something.
What's baseline, Janine? How many people do we need to turn on the furnace here?
That's why we wanted 2,000 people.
Yeah, I'd say the more the better. Yeah, I mean, one of the things about the accumulation of all this different information into one database is what Leah mentioned. You know, we are not a bubble. We are not just on our own. We are sharing data with this consortium. So this consortium is a bunch of different researchers looking at all different things that have to do with FASD. So it's not just the pipeline of our particular study. You know, all of this information feeds into this larger consortium where some people are looking at facial features and some people are looking at cognitive and behavioral.
Like features. The data form in Canada, right? So with CanFASD, and they're linked up to all the participating clinics, you know, diagnostic clinics, and it all goes into a database. And so researchers can, is that something like that?
But that's true. But right now, one thing we can do is, I don't know how your listeners feel about animal models of prenatal alcohol exposure.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Joanne Weinberg does rat mice models.
Yes, okay. Yeah, yeah. So there are some people actually in Washington, D.C. at the Children's National Hospital, and they're also part of the consortium, but there are other animal models, zebrafish, mice. And when they manipulate alcohol and find a gene that is doing something, they can ask us, this gene, I think, like the zebrafish people can say, this, we think this gene is affecting the features around the chin. And so we can look at our 3D imaging and our photographs and see, does the same gene, is it doing the same thing in humans that it seems to be doing in fish? Or, you know, this is coming up in mice. And actually, this is something we just recently worked on. In mice, this pathway, this particular gene, do we see effects in humans too? And so we can look at anxiety. I think I looked at anxiety and I don't remember what else I looked at, but
that's one thing
we looked at was, are they anxious or how anxious are they on a quantitative scale?
Okay. Do we have a timeline or are we just in recruitment right now?
Yes, we're recruiting right now. Leah, correct me if I'm wrong, but June 1st is the end of the grant cycle that we're currently on. So as many people as we can get in by
June 1st. If you want to get that money, let's do it by June 1st. 2,000 people by June 1st.
That'd be great.
Well, you got to think big, right? Go big or go home.
You can participate in this study after June 1st, but I don't think we can pay after June 1st because of regulations.
Hey, you need a deadline. You need a deadline. So we're looking at June 1st here. What is, Janine, I'll start with you. When you get, obviously you're excited about it. When you close your eyes, like, what is the best case scenario that this study does for FASD community?
Wow, that's a big question.
Well, we got to dream big, right?
Absolutely.
Because you obviously have dreams about this, your study. And what is the big, when you're daydreaming about getting 2,000 people and figuring out this data, how does this improve the lives of caregivers, of individuals? Who does this influence? How does the medical community, what warms the cockles when you're thinking about this?
Yeah, I think our goals are very similar to anyone else who works in this area or has, you know, a loved one with FASD or themselves with FASD, is really to understand FASDs better. When we understand them better, then we can diagnose them better. Like you were saying, Barb, it's hard to get a clear diagnosis. And once you get a clear diagnosis, then explaining it and trying to get services. So the better we can understand FASDs, the more we can help create interventions or understand why some interventions work or work better in some people than in others. So it really is about all of us putting our heads together to make heads or tails of what is, you know, a complex and sometimes confusing topic, but is so important for us to really understand better and pull out all of those puzzle pieces. So we're just starting to put those puzzle pieces together. But I think, you know, in my dream is we all start to add different pieces to that puzzle. And because we're all working together, you know, parents and families giving us pieces of the puzzle and people looking at, like we said, zebrafish giving us pieces of the puzzle and genetics as pieces of the puzzle. And we start to put those all together, we can see a clearer picture of what FASD is, what causes it, why some people are affected, and hopefully make a difference in people's lives in terms of how do we approach it and how do we explain it and how do we understand it.
What barriers are you guys up against? What could derail this? Where do you foresee some challenges?
I think one of our big challenges originally was how complex the study is and how many things were going on. And Abby, over the last few months, has really kind of taken the lead on making this study more understandable and making it easier to navigate. Like you were saying, you know, what comes next? What are the actual steps here instead of so many things going on at once, right? She's created some videos and answered some questions to help, you know, you can read about it or you can understand it in a few different ways.
Cool.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is there a way that for the people who participate, will they be able to see the end result? Like, will they be notified or like,
because you would have emails, right? Would you send out updates and what's going on? Because, you know, when you're part of something, you're curious to see, have you guys thought of that or is that part of the plan? Because I think regular correspondence or semi-regular could not only help people stay interested, but also maybe recruit others.
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually do keep active on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter on our social media pages. And people are welcome to follow us there.
Yes, that, you went ahead, so I got to do the thing for it. It is now time for our segment we call the Shameless Self-Promotion Segment, where you unequivocally, unabashedly share where people can find you. So tell us all the grams, all the ads, where can people follow and find you guys? Do it.
All right. So we are at FASD Research on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as our study website, which I mentioned earlier, which is digfasd.org. And those are great places to kind of see what we're up to and what's going on. As we mentioned, the grant cycle is ending in June. And after that, there may not be as many staff on the study. So if results are published or if anything comes out of this research, the consortium website, Leah, is that correct, would be a great place for people to look to stay up to date.
And we'll have that on our website. That actually, yeah.
We'll put it on our blog and all of our social media as well. Because Barb, I think I can speak for you too, that we want this to succeed, right? You help us as trainers and coaches and facilitators with information that help the parents and the frontline people make better decisions. That's what happens when we have good data and good information and good understanding, because for so many years, parents have felt like they're just keisters blown in the wind and, you know, flying by the seat of their pants, trying to figure this out. And with your hard work, and we need all of you, we need someone who loves to talk to people at the front end. We need people who love to get into the medical stuff and excited about talking genetics. And we need people who are excited about just getting into it, getting through the data. And your passion rings through, Barb. You can tell.
Oh, totally. Huh? Yeah, no, totally. We need, it's, yeah, I could never do any of it, but thank you.
Yeah, like you make me now want Janine, like, let's talk genetics. It's interesting. And I think it gives people confidence when they know what it is. And when you break it down, it's part of, I think, why we're successful is that knowledge translation. So your team is awesome. Now, before I go, when you're not doing this stuff, I'm going to go around the horn. Janine, what do you do for a hobby?
What do I do for a hobby?
That was a long ass pause, man. Like, but
she must legally. Do something real weird. So
I could edit out my awkwardness. Hey,
that's cool. Man. That's because she's blushing.
I like the pole dancing. Yeah, she's gonna say
anything. As long as it's legal, man. Outdoors. What's your legal hobby?
My legal hobby. No, I love being outdoors. So I have a dog that I love going for walks and jogs with outside. I love to read and I love music.
Cool. What was your favorite band?
I can't pick one. There's so many good. Yeah, so I like a plethora of genres. Everything from, you know, blues to alternative to folk.
Okay, who are you listening to right now?
You're killing me here.
No, it's like, so example, mine is Pearl Jam. I love Pearl Jam. You always put them in, and that's cool. But who's in your playlist right now that you're rocking to?
I was listening to some Ella Fitzgerald this morning.
Sick. There's nothing wrong with that, man. We're just getting to know you. There's nothing wrong with it. What about yourself, Abby? When you're not wheeling and dealing on the phone and creating videos, what do you do?
Like Janine, I also really like being outdoors. I'm based in Indiana, so right now that's not really an option. But in the summertime, hiking and kayaking and things like that. And in the wintertime, I resort to baking.
There's nothing wrong with that. Listen, I'm in Northern Ontario, Canada. So you want to talk about... She's in Minnesota. We get it. We live the winter. Hockey and bad hairdo. That's what we do. When you're baking, what is the last thing on Netflix that you binge watched?
Oh, gosh. I think New Girl.
Cool. Oh, that's it's quite clever, that show. I think Zooey Deschanel, is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, watch it. See, we need that. What about yourself, Leah? What do you do?
I love to walk. We have an English Shepherd, and I love to walk the dog with my husband. We walk 2 miles in the morning and 2 miles in the evening. And the other day it was -2. I just bundle up.
It was -32 here, Celsius. Put that into context. I know, it's crazy. What kind of dog do you have, Janine?
I have a golden doodle.
Oh, that's
She loves the snow. She loves it.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Well, so will you come back? Will you have Tatiana back when you
definitely
get some stuff here? And I'm just going to encourage our listeners to participate. You know, we hear, and sometimes the narrative is nothing's happening, people aren't doing anything. And so we just want to invite not only individuals on the spectrum, but also the caregivers to reach out to their loved ones on the spectrum to help people realize that you guys are really putting in the work here, and it's not scary. You're going to talk to Abby. I think that's great. And so Janine's also plugging you, Abby. Is that you shared good general education info on your personal social media?
On our study, yeah.
Okay.
So on our study website, it doesn't just have information about the actual study. Abby's created some really just great infographics and just little educational posts that you can share with family or friends to help explain FASDs and the nuances. So those are really cool new things she's created.
Right. Because I'm in the same boat as, you know, Dr. Lee too, is a part of why we do this show, is to take everything that is sometimes isolated and just put it in one big silo to share it with people. So thanks, guys. I know maybe you weren't prepared to do this at this time, but you guys killed it. You were excellent. And just thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having us. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And thank you for all that you do for this cause.
Well, you're welcome.
We've heard a lot about you, and I've read a lot about you.
So is there a big discrepancy between what you heard and what you read, and now that you've talked to me?
No, not. I wouldn't say discrepancy. I would say it's really nice to have a face to go with everything and personality. You're very dynamic. I can see why you have a big following. It's great.
That was very diplomatic of you. Nobody's talking about, but we're with it. We dig it. Again, guys, honestly, you guys kick ass, and I can't wait to see what you guys do. And on my end, we'll do whatever we can to help you get as many people as possible. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Okay. So that was awesome, Barb. What do you think? Was that awesome?
Yeah, they are really cool. I love the work that they are doing.
And not only that, because there was no prep, right? We just met with them and they weren't expecting to do this. And they said, okay, we'll do it. It's not like we weren't coercing them. We weren't threatening in any way. But the fact that they stepped up and they did it was amazing, which is a testament that they know their stuff, right? So there was nothing prepared. Let's get into the notes a little bit. So right off the bat, Janine Schultze, if she played hockey, she'd be a Schultze. That's a great nickname.
Yep.
Genes are instructions in our bodies. They are in every single one of our cells. They literally are the instructions that tell our body to do everything it needs to do. But those instructions are not 100% of who we are. They work in collaboration with our environment. So trying to figure out the combination of what these two complex things does is what they're looking to do in their study. As a layperson, is that what you took away, what their aspirations are here?
Yeah, totally. I just thought it was fascinating how they're just trying to figure out all of the different things that can be common or can set things, you know, behaviors or symptoms apart within our population who have FASD. It was just kind of cool to hear what they're doing and thinking.
Then Janine was talking about, so we have genes that we're born with. They're inherited from their parents, but as we are growing and developing, environment does play a role. You hear that. You teach trauma, right?
Yep.
Absolutely. And so they say, you know, trauma, even in FASD interventions, environment does play a role.
Mm-hmm. 100% it plays a role. I think that's cool that they're also looking at that and digging into that aspect of it.
Yeah. And so then I talked about epigenetics, because I hear about epigenetics all the time. And Janine was letting us know that there are things that turn on. That's what epigenetic changes are. That there are things that turn on and off some of the genes. Some are permanent. Some can be turned back on. I kept thinking of a light switch. Did you have a visual when she was talking about this?
I did not.
Okay.
Nope. That's great. I'm not as visual of a learner, I guess.
Oh, well, there you go. Some could actually be turned on, but does not change the actual instructions. We are looking at which genes play a role. Once we've figured out which genes instructions, they are important, we can combine it to look forward into how epigenetics, how they might change on and off. So then she was talking about how prenatal alcohol exposure affects genes, mm-hmm. how those genes and instructions that start off may play a role in how the genes are affected by prenatal alcohol exposure, or how much they are affected. So kind of like a predisposition. So that's where I was like, I kept asking because I figure I'm not afraid to look silly, because I think especially in my situation, you know, once you get comfortable, once I understand something, then I could teach others, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, it's such a common question or thing, comment that people will make whenever you or I are out training or talking or speaking about this is, you know, I drank and my kids are grown. Well, I drank a little bit while pregnant and they're grown and they're fine, but there's all these other factors that play into it. And I just think this is really hopeful that we'll have eventually after this study is done, some more information on what all plays into that.
It was interesting. She was talking about how some genes may enhance the effect of alcohol. Other genes might be a protective factor. So what really got me was just how organized they were in terms of like Abby, who's an absolute, sounds like an absolute sweetheart. Yes. And you mentioned that you appreciated her disposition because you've had experiences, right? When you've called like the gatekeeper.
Yeah. I mean, Abby's the front line. She's the one who's going to answer the phone or the emails or the questions. And many caregivers have had experiences where that person there, that first person that you come in contact with, maybe was not very caring or patient or whatever it was. But Abby just had such a great demeanor to her. And I think that will help a lot of our families who are trying to help out with this research.
Yeah, because they are looking for 2,000 people.
Yeah.
And anybody could do it. So this is not region specific.
Yep. And it doesn't have to be somebody with a confirmed diagnosis. It can be suspected. And that helps with a lot of people because we know we have a lot of caregivers and families that we know who don't have that confirmation and maybe don't have that diagnosis. So, and this is so important, you guys. I mean, Jeff, you and I all the time are citing research when we do training, right? With families and professionals. And so it's kind of cool to be able to be involved in helping with this long-term, with helping get more information about FASD.
At the end of the day, they want to understand FASD better. Mm-hmm. Because it's all over the place, right? And for everybody. I think we all want that too. Then when they understand it, they could diagnose it better. It's really is hard to get a clear diagnosis. It's hard to get a diagnosis here in Canada. We're lucky we do have nationwide guidelines, FASD guidelines, but in the States, it's different all over the place, right?
Yeah, it's a bit different. It's not as consistent.
And so they're trying to do that. And it's no big deal. It's like when you spit in the tube, that's what I imagine. I did the ancestry.com thing.
Yeah.
That's what I had to do. And then you just send it back, but they're here for you. So, and they talked about anonymity in terms of like keeping it under, keeping it quiet in terms of privacy, which is important. But it's all about, you know, we often want change. We want things to be better.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we can't wait for other people to do it. The community, you know, has to be involved. You know, back in the day, Barb, was that you like, why hasn't somebody done something about this? And then you come to the realization, well, I have to do something about this.
Totally. That's what, when Akilah was first diagnosed, I was trying to find a support group. I was trying to find trainings. I was trying to find all of this stuff and it wasn't really around. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to start doing it then. Like, I'm sick of waiting. So yeah, no, it's that quote, I think was it Gandhi? Be the change, right? Like, let's do it. Let's get to it, people.
And so let's participate. We actively have an opportunity to help them collect information so that will enhance interventions and understanding moving forward. So even if you have an adult on the spectrum, and I know sometimes people could get burned out and say, well, this isn't going to affect me. But someone said something to me once, and I wish I could say who it was, but you know, I can't even remember what I had for breakfast. But they were just talking about like, when it comes to advocating or participating in studies, it's not so much my family, but there's people coming behind me.
Exactly. Exactly. The research might not be there at the same time when it could help you out, but it's going to help other families. And I know that most of us are pretty passionate about our entire community. You know, you start getting connected with other caregivers or even professionals who are working with and supporting individuals on the spectrum. And we are one amazing, cool group of people. Let me tell you, get involved if you're not.
Yeah. So we're totally putting our seal or our endorsement behind doing this. And it's interesting and it helps. Okay. So the parent participates, the research gets done, we get better information, and it helps us as trainers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
Yeah.
In order to make things happen, just get on board. Let's get it done. Of course, you could visit our blog, fasdsuccess.com/podcast, to reach out. We'll have all the links there. But of course, you could even just Google Dig FASD and they'll have all the information there. And of course, they listed it in the podcast. I'm glad you were here, Barb, because it raised the intelligent level of the show.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but it was fun for me. So thanks for having me.
Okay. So in the show, what I like to do is, I know people listen to it because, especially at the end here, because A, they're freaking cool. They're good people listening all the way to the end of the show. But sometimes they also listen to it because they had a shitty week, you know, shitty month, just they're going through some shit. Now, listen, I've known you for a while and you deal with a lot of stuff too. What's the mindset like when you're going through a load of shit? How do you get through it? Because you're always smiling, you're always laughing, even though I say, how was your day? And you know, you tell me all this craziness.
Yeah. You know, like for me, honestly, it's about connecting with other caregivers who are living it too. And going, and whether it's getting on a Facebook page that's a support group, like our group that we've got, you know, the one that's out there, or if it's, you know, connecting with some of the individual caregivers that I've connected with and just like letting it out, like, oh my God, this is what happened, or, you know, just being able, and then they're not the people that are going to be like, well, did you try a sticker chart, or did you try to give them this consequence or whatever? Those are the people that are just going to hug you, even if it's a virtual freaking hug, we'll take it, right? And say, oh my God, you're amazing, you're great. And that's sometimes what you just need to lift up a little bit. So that's the biggest thing, is just that human connection with other people who get it. But then the other big thing for me is I got to laugh a lot. I mean, that is what I do. Like, I mean, this sounds horrible and raunchy, but like, I'll just sit and watch The Hangover. Like, that movie just makes me laugh. I could watch it almost every day. It makes me laugh. And, but you know, just whatever it is to get some, you know, endorphins released and that kind of stuff, you got to be able to laugh and have fun, even in the midst of a lot of crap.
But at the end of the day, guys, Barb Sin, you guys are amazing people. You're amazing parents. A lot of people don't understand what you go through every single day, even to get through a single day. You know, you got to be a thinker for your whole family and make sure your whole family's running. So listen, if at sometimes, you know, you're wearing the same jogging pants, or you got your hair tied up, and you know, you're just making it through, just make it through, because you know what? We're eventually going to get through. We're going to get through, and you're going to have made it. You're going to have made it. Your kids are going to have made it. And then 5 years from now, we'll be dealing with a whole set of other problems, but at least you'll have your sanity and your mental health intact. Keep on grinding. Do not stop. Barbara Clark, thank you so much for joining me today. And let me know what you think, guys. Email me, jeff@fasdforever.com. Did you enjoy having Barb? Did you enjoy having co-host? My guess is that they'll be like, we like this Barb chick better.
I don't think that's going to happen, Jeffrey.
All right, guys. Until that next week, have a kick-ass day. Keep smiling. You're amazing. And until then, we'll talk then. All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.